Well, this is one of those dirty tricks that's completely my fault. I confused dates, and today is about faith and faithfulness, which seemed to fit with the idea of Mother's Day. And next week we will do cult and culture. I think I'm on some kind of semantic rhythm here with those kinds of titles. For years, I really tried my best to duck Mother's Day as a topic because, as everyone realizes, it is a minefield. It's a minefield of sentimentality on one side of the Hallmark card industry. It is, of course, the equal and opposite trap of getting completely cynical about how it has been taken over by the card and floral industry. There's the historic approach, which is Mother's Day was actually invented by rather radical Unitarian women in the 19th century who thought then as now that women and mothers were underappreciated by society, and the origin of Mother's Day, not unlike so many other holidays and holy days, was pure and even interesting before getting co-opted by the commercialism with which we are so familiar and often happily complicit. I know I have often been happily complicit with the commercial aspects of Mother's Day, and now that I no longer have a mother, I would give almost anything to buy flowers and make a phone call. So for those of you who have a mother, buy flowers and make a phone call. It's okay. The issue that I want to talk about in relationship to Mother's Day and why I think that faith and faithfulness have some application is that those of us who had mothers, those of you who are mothers, those of us who are parents, who know children and adults, understand something very important about the nature of love. It's very volatile. And one of the great traps of Mother's Day is the sentimentality that creates the expectation that mothers are perfect. And one of the great traps historically and in terms of gender politics is that if you raise people up and put them on a pedestal, you both isolate them and put them in some place that is pretty unstable, because it's easy to get knocked off of that pedestal and to have those radical alternatives of the sainted mother and the miserable fallen shrew. Religion does this, as all of you who read the Da Vinci Code know. It creates this dichotomy between, or actually if you read the Bible, the dichotomy between the Holy Mother of God, whether in the version of the New Testament or Hadassah, Esther in Hebrew scriptures, and before Esther, Astarte in Sumerian scriptures, of a queen of heaven, as opposed to the real people on earth with all of their problems and imperfections. And we tend to see life all too often in radical extremes between the saint and the sinner. The perfect, soft, light, violin-playing ideal of woman and mother, or that harsh shrew that is exemplified on sitcoms and in lots of drama. And, of course, most human beings are well in the middle, and not at one end of either saint or horrid sinner. It's a very kind of dangerous place that we put people, and that Mother's Day is part of that sentimentalizing of the whole role of mothers. Most mothers, most fathers, most parents, most spouses, at times in the process of living and loving on a daily basis, want dearly to throttle the beloved. I know very few parents who at some time, whether 3 o'clock in the morning for the 7th changing of the diaper, or 3 o'clock in the morning waiting for them to come back from the date from which they were supposed to be back at 11 o'clock, or some other 3 o'clock in the morning filled with worry and dread and anger, weren't ready to scream, commit mayhem, and either run away screaming or slink off like the runaway bride. In fact, in some 35 years of performing marriages, I have seen fear in some eyes where people were considering in the middle of the service running away. Sometimes it was not a bad idea in my viewpoint, but I have never found myself to be a good judge of these things for other people. And so some weddings that I performed 35 years ago, and I gave them, an hour and a half, are still together, while two others didn't survive the reception. Literally, truly, didn't survive the reception. Wasn't my fault. You know, I don't think it was anything I said. I usually try to warranty for parts and labor, but I really can't do a warranty for bad faith, which I suppose you're still under warranty, Danzig. Don't worry about it. But again, not on parts and labor. Love is not always the same. Not parental love, not spousal love, and not what we call faith, divine love, even that kind of love that the Greeks called agape, the unconditional acceptance. Because even unconditional love might not have conditions, but it has moods. It has moods when we can be angry, when we want to slam a door and walk out, when we want to jettison the most of the time beloved, and that is completely normal, and it is completely normal in terms of what real love and faith and faithfulness are in human relationships and even in issues of religion. In the marriage ceremony that I used for you and for another couple of folks, there's a line from Anne Morrow Lindbergh that says, when you love someone, you do not love them all the time in exactly the same way from moment to moment. It's a lie even to pretend to, and yet this is exactly what most of us demand. We have so little faith in the flow of the tides of life, of love, of relationship. It's all true. It's all true. I can remember many times when my mother, my now sainted mother, have been very happy to hold my head underwater and count to 30, knowing that I can go to 240. I mean, I need to put that part in. And other times when she was absolutely panicked and filled with love and carrying me and singing to me while I was sick, which is why that particular hymn gets to me. And as I remember carrying my son and singing to him when he was sick, and my singing may not have had curative powers, but they had calming powers for him. Our relationships are intimate relationships, and the mark of intimacy is often friction, that we know how to love each other and we know how to hurt each other. And faith and faithfulness is staying engaged in that relationship. This week, aside from the Victory in Europe week, it was also National Day of Prayer, and let me throw in a very unusual plug for the Orange County Register that has a picture of all of the people praying, and you'll see Marlies here, our president, praying and singing and praying to remember the words and stay on key. Sometimes we bother God with trivialities. What I really liked about this is what the caption said. which was a National Day of Prayer for All People Everywhere ceremony. It was sponsored by the Fullerton Interfaith Ministerial Society, leaders of Christian, Jewish, Muslim, and Unitarian religion. So thank you, Marlies, and thank you for understanding that we're in a little different category here and not really a part of one particular branch or faith, but we really try to be inclusive in the languages of faith that we respond to and that we use. The other day was also Holocaust Remembrance Day, Yom HaShoah. And I bring this up in terms of faith and faithfulness because something very unusual and I think moving came out of one of the death camps of World War II. And it talked, and to me it speaks of the intimacy of faith and of relationship as opposed to simply belief. And that is, some men in one of the death camps looked around and said, you know something, we've been faithful and things are not going very well. God made a covenant and we're dying. So, you know something, I think God is maybe guilty of some malpractice, of some violation of the covenant. And they put God on trial. They convened what's called a Beth Din, which is a house of law and judgment, and they put God on trial and accused God basically of nonfeasance. They convicted God. And the next thing they did after convicting God of nonfeasance was they adjourned for afternoon prayer. Now, what is moving to me in this story is the kind of intimacy and of love that we have in our relationships, that we put each other on trial, parents, children, spouses, members of a congregation. We find each other, and sometimes ourselves, wanting, and yet real intimacy and community and faith is the faithfulness to stay engaged in the relationship. Everyone knows that the opposite of love is not hate. It is indifference. The opposite of faith is not atheism. I know many very faithful and devout and convicted atheists. The opposite of faith is indifference. It's not caring. The people who stay engaged in the argument, in the discussion, in the relationship, are, in a sense, being faithful. That metaphor is used in the Ten Commandments. Thou shalt have no other God before me. Or as Unitarians say, believe in at most one God. But it doesn't say there aren't others. And it also uses the words of faith and fidelity later on in scriptures when, and please pardon the language, I'm using a word that is in the King James Version, so I'm not just trying to shock you, but people are accused of whoring after false gods. The issue of faithfulness is an issue of staying in the relationship, working it out, yelling and screaming, some people after the Holocaust, after the war, from every side, from the firebombing of Dresden, from Hiroshima, slammed the door on religion. Some of them slammed the door on life and on hope and walked away in a despair and in a loneliness. As time goes by, many started to come back, to open the door a crack, to stick their heads in and to offer up their hearts again to hope, to belief, to love, to relationship, to taking a chance that the future might be worth being connected to. People who said the war was too terrible, our world is too terrible, there is too much violence, too much hatred, I don't want to bring children into this world, decided that, yes, they could take the chance and have the faith and the faithfulness to say yes to life again, to say yes to tomorrow again, to extend their lives, our lives, in the hope that is incarnate in the creation and the supporting of future generations. That, I believe, is the ultimate faithfulness to life. It isn't about being constant. It isn't about always being happy and always being in love and having it just life is beautiful or life is ugly, our parents are wonderful or they are monsters. It is understanding each other in the fullness and the complexity of our humanity. It is an understanding life and the wonderful gifts it gives us and the terrible tragedies and the pain of the fear of loss and loss itself. But knowing that those tears that we shed, that those feelings of emptiness in our hearts or anger in our hearts or love in our hearts are the reminders that we are alive. On this day, we celebrate. We celebrate the faith that let our parents say yes to life with all of their complexity and all of life's complexity. We celebrate our relationship to the future, to our children, our grandchildren, whether physically ours or simply emotionally ours, because they take our memories into the future. They take our values into the future. The kids sang today as if they were actually believing that they were supposed to listen to us and listen to what we say. And they said it without, they sang it without any particular sense of irony. These same kids in another 5 years will have a very different delivery to that song. But the truth is, they will watch us more than they listen to us. And that is appropriate. They will watch us and they will hear the tone of our voices more clearly than they will hear our words. And years from now, when they remember us, and they will remember what we sang to them, the tone in which we told them of our anger and our love and our devotion or our indifference. They will see how it was that we treated family, how it was that we treated the stranger, how it was that we treated the poor in the midst of our community. And it is not by the words of our affirmation that they will carry our values into the future. It is by what they see and by what they truly know of us as we carry all of the past and transmit it to them from generation to generation.